You are on the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the State Board meeting for December 4th, 2019. I'll comment that it looks like all seven board members are here. Ask Ben to call the roll for the board members, please.
Ms. Sandy.
Here.
Deputy Minister Samarowski.
Here.
Mr. Ketting.
Here.
Mr. Fogel.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Mr. Pruse.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Would you continue with staff and public?
Okay, let's start here at the table.
Tom Boutte, Ada.
Okay.
Brendan Applegate, Ada.
Amy Subit, Ada.
Yuna Ellsworth, Ada.
Vicky Sresta, Medios.
Sean Kalfa, Ada.
Jeff Renoir, Ada.
Elwood Bremer, Alaska Journal of Commerce.
Jesse Peterson, Ada.
Jeffrey Johns, Ada.
Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Brent Kempinen, Ada. Do we have public on the phone? Public on the phone. I know I got Ken Vassar.
Ken Vassar here.
Who's Ken with?
Yes, Dave Grossclaus with Dorsey and Whitney.
Any other public?
I've got someone who asked, should we stay on hold? You may have a group on hold.
No, we don't got anybody on hold.
Should I ask them to try calling back in?
Yeah, tell them to call back in. Because, yeah, unless they're calling in the wrong conference line. Any other public on the phone at this time? Okay, so we got those two.
Thank you, Corinne. This is a modified agenda that we...
I dropped it off on the top.
Okay.
Of you, everybody's packet on their spot today.
Did Julie get one here?
Yes, it was on her desk. Her
first thing this morning.
Oh, this.
Yes.
Yeah. No, okay.
Huh?
I hope I have the same one, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so did you have a chance to look see it?
Yeah, it should have been at your desk. I put it on your spot. It should have been paper clipped together.
Probably got mixed up.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. You got longer, oh my gosh.
Everybody got one?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so look for a motion to put on the table.
To approve the agenda.
Yep. Discussion? Tom, any additions or deletions to it?
Well,
all they did was add
Copper River.
Copper River, yeah, that's the only change. Yeah.
No. Okay. Any objections to adopting the agenda? Hearing, seeing none, the agenda is adopted. It brings us to item number 5, public comments. I'll remind everybody that who wants to make a public comment, limit to 3 minutes per person. Please state your name and affiliation, if you have an affiliation for the record. So we have that. I'll go online first. Anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Online? Anybody in the boardroom? All right, I'm going to close the public comment section. Brings us to prior minutes for October 23rd, 2019. Take a motion to put it on the table.
Motion to approve the prior minute meetings, meeting minutes.
Second.
Thank you. Has all the board members had a chance to review the minutes? If so, any corrections that they see? Any objections to adopting the meeting minutes? And the minutes are adopted. Brings us to item number 7, which is our new business. So first up is AFY19-ADA financial statements presentations. Tom?
Thanks. you folks were just through this with AEA, and so our CFO, Brenda Applegate, and instead of being so formal with Mr. Session there, of BDO could come up, and I'll let them take over. I've read the CAFR twice, most recently on Sunday, but I sure don't know it like I got to know the fiscal year 18 CAFR. I got so I had sections memorized, and I'm sure not there on the new one yet.
For the record, this is Brenda Applegate, and with me I have
Vicki Shrestha from BDO, the authority's auditors, here to present the FY19 financial statements.
Hello all again. I was not going to go through all of the same deal with what we did for Alaska Energy Authority. I do have
while looking at me.
Yeah. I do have the audit wrap-up document and the financial statements. The audit wrap-up document, same thing. I was going to go through a few items in here that's maybe just focusing on things that are a little bit different from what was presented as part of the AEA audit. But like for the AEA audit, I would just like to start by thanking all the staff and everybody that helped us get through the audit over here. Like I was saying earlier, the EDA financial statements are one of the more complicated financial statements that we have to audit. It's not just because of GASB following and stuff like we talked about earlier. There's a lot of complicated accounting issues that come up because of the kind of transactions that EDA enters into during the year, and some of those transactions do not have guidance that are specific to them, so you actually have to look into the FASB guidance, which is the for-profit guidance, and plus sometimes it might even not be there. So there's situations that have been pretty complicated that we have come across over there. So as far as the audit wrap-up document, the part I was going to focus on this year is there's no real new accounting pronouncement that you need to be aware of. There was a GASB 88 related to disclosures on some liabilities and bonds that's in your financial statements, but nothing major. Your significant accounting estimate in your financial statements is still your net pension and your OPEB liability in the financial statements. There is a large number in the financials, but the amount that EDA has to contribute to the pension for PERS and for OPEB is capped at 22%. So even if the liability is there, what you contribute is 22% every pay period.
22% of the gross
wages.
The gross wages.
Mm-hmm.
That's the total liabilities, the 22%?
The liability is based on all these factors, and then there's an allocation done. So basically, the state of Alaska has the full liability, and then there's an allocation done where that liability is separated out to the different cities and school districts, so all of that. And then from the state of Alaska portion, there is a calculation done at the state level that allocates the amount to EDA. So EDA is part of as a component unit of the state. So for majority of the organizations, other governmental organizations like cities and boroughs, there's an actual audited allocation worksheet that you can get the numbers from. But for EDA, the state does the calculation and gives them the number.
What has that number been over the past year? What percentage? Staying at
22%? The 22% is what the legislators have capped the contributions that have to be made to.
So we're paying the maximum amount.
You're paying 22%. If that percentage was based on the liability, that amount could be much higher, really.
22% overburden?
22% of your gross payroll you have to pay for pension.
So you have the wages and you have burden. On top of
that's all set. That's all on top of that.
It's on top of it.
It's all on top. It's on top of wages.
Yeah. It's a burden. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the 22% is a blended rate. That's both for pension and for other post-employment benefits like medical insurance and that type of thing.
So, if you wanted to know what.
Say that again, Brenda.
22% is a blended rate. It actually covers the pension and also other post-employment benefits, such as retiree medical.
This is all the liability for.
But this is a past liability.
The liability that's on our books is an allocation from the state. What ADA is actually going to pay towards that liability is capped at 22% of our gross wages.
So do we owe more than that, and this is just kind of a make everybody feel good? We paid the 22%, but the debt is actually, like, I think it's something like $14 billion in that fund, right, that we owe?
State.
Well, I mean, but we're part of the state, so our allocation right now is 22%, but that's kind of a false, make us feel good, but not really.
22% of 14 billion.
No, what 22% of the wages?
Yeah. No, it's a cost sharing kind of plan, so it's an allocation based on the number of employees you have and all that that goes in there. The liability, if you look on page 22, as of 2019, was between OPEB and pension, like $11.7
million. 11.7. So what if we just paid that off?
Because it's a cost sharing plan, it's not. I don't think you can do that. So
no.
We'd say thank you, but
it wouldn't help us any. We would still.
So how do they come up with the number? I mean, is it based on past wages? Is it based on everybody's wages? What is it based on?
Yeah.
There is a. So I don't know if I can explain the.
It seems like Yolia.
You can see nobody's asking. See Yolia back
it's
there.
It's based on contributions.
Contributions. For ADA, it's based on the contributions that are made during the year to the plan and as a percentage of what the state has to make.
Is it going down?
It usually goes down every year unless the.
How can it not go down if we're paying 22% over our cost?
It's not over cost.
It's not over cost. This is in addition to your cost This is for other benefits.
Future. It's for past.
It's for pension. It's for pension and for medical.
It's for short funding prior.
Right.
Right?
Correct.
And so you got a number on the books.
Yep.
If you pay, you got that number from somebody. So if someone wrote a check for that amount of money, why doesn't it go off the books?
Because you're part of a cost-sharing plan, the rules are a little bit different.
So then that number's false.
That
seriously.
That number.
Excuse the whole P&L. You really don't know what that is then.
Yeah, the amount that you actually have to pay, you don't know. Yeah, and you cannot just extinguish that liability. That's why it's a liability for you. Because.
But you've got $11 million liability. It's a finite number.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we pay it? And get rid of it and not have to deal with it anymore.
Our payments, our 22% payments, don't go directly against our liability. They go into the pot that goes against the entire liability, and that entire liability gets then reallocated to everybody. So there's not a direct connection mm-hmm. between what we pay in and what that allocated liability is to us.
Is that the dividend then?
Well, that's why we...
less than... The state would have a lot of the unfunded liability. So the 22% is probably like 33%. So it's not just for past liabilities. There's still people in the pension.
But we're still. Isn't that fund? Correct me if I'm right or wrong, but it was $14 billion in the rears. Is it still?
Well, it's not that much. It's like, don't quote me. It's like $8 or $9 billion. But yes.
So that's with a B. That's not million. With a B.
Billion.
We paid $5 or $6 billion under the Parnell administration.
Parnell put $3 billion in that I know of. Yeah.
There's still
shot.
People accruing more benefits. There's people in
there's
the pension system.
Just like Medicare.
I understand, but there's a number on our financial statements that says it's a liability.
That's all.
Right, because that's the amount.
So if it's not related to anything, how can you put a number there?
It's only because it's an allocation. The relationship is our contributions compared to the total contributions the states put in to the plan. So we get an allocated portion. But that number isn't attached to, like, me or to any of the employees here. It's just an allocation that's updated annually. So it's a rolling number. And it's only because we're part of the state of Alaska that we have to report part of that on our balance sheet because it's a cost-sharing plan.
Mm-hmm. So if we paid the $11 million, would it be still $11 million the next year?
Yeah.
Another number next year because we wouldn't get direct credit for that payment.
Get credit for the payment.
We don't get no credit for the $11 million, but this is a hell of a deal.
I understand how we got here. I just don't understand how you can put a number on a financial statement that is completely subjective and inaccurate, and that you can't
an audited financial statement.
An audited. I guess I don't understand how that works. Not that I want to go to
creative
accounting school.
Yeah, no. The liability just comes from the employees that have worked in the state and that got into tier one, tier two of the pension liability.
There's $11 million.
Where does the number come from?
Yeah, $11 million. If someone wants to pay it and zero it out, you're saying we can't do it.
They get the number from the state, Dana.
Retirement and benefits, I think, mm-hmm. really, is where the number comes
from. That's their allocation.
Well, just two answers. One, Mr. Samareski is effectively chief of staff to the Retirement Management Board. It's his fault. There's probably nobody in Anchorage today who knows as much about this as he does because of his job. But there's a gross percentage of the annual actuarial estimate, and frankly, to cut to the chase, if it was based on the cost, like I'm tier one, but I'm already retired, I don't know what tier Brenda is, I don't know Chris and whatnot, the reason that it has to be a gross percentage is, quite frankly, we'd all be gaming the system, we meaning the school districts, we'd all be gaming the system, so when we went to replace Yulia, we'd put in the job ad, can't be tier one or tier two. So we'd all be gaming the system, frankly. And there's a little of that now, but we won't get into that. But anyway, Mr. Samareski is right up to speed on this as effectively chief of staff of the Retirement Board.
I'm not arguing with the number. Yep. I guess it's duty on how you get the number. What I would like to just kind of understand is there's a number on our financial statement. It's a liability. And it's something you can't pay off.
Yeah, not in this situation.
You can pay it off. It won't do any good. Next year you're going to have another number. Is that right?
So for GAAP, on the GAAP side of the equation,
hell of a deal.
I don't understand how you handle that.
Yeah, so that's why GASB 68, they had to write a special GASB for this. Until 2015, was it 2015? Yeah, until 2015, this liability was never recorded on your financial statements. That's when GASB came back and said, basically, it is something that the government owes, so you have to put a number in there. And that's why there's all these calculations that are done by actuaries based on the people's retirement age, mortality, and all of that factors. They come up with a liability, and that's what gets allocated.
That's how they come up with the billion,
And Vicki, tell me if this is correct, but...
not the honest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because we have the statutory limit of 22% for the state of Alaska... That's why we're not paying the full amount. Mm-hmm. If we didn't have that statutory limit, then we would be paying the full amount.
Yep.
But we have a limit in our statutes that keeps us from doing that. Mm-hmm. And I get what you're saying, because when we had to implement this was a question I had. It's like, why should Ada have a liability on its balance sheet that we'll never be able to pay? I was told because that's what the GASB requires.
I mean, actually, you will pay it off over time, mm-hmm. as every state agency and the state itself is paying it off. Within 20 or 25 years, the liability will be extinguished. But there's nothing for ADA to do other than pay the 22% that everybody pays and realize the state itself is paying more in addition to that 22%.
Yeah,
I probably shouldn't really be talking because I'm a board member on this, so I'll shut up from here on.
Is the additional dollars coming out of the GF, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. There is always an on-behalf payment that the state makes on
Well, what I'm, you know, the other thing I'm worried about is $11 million this year. It could be $40 million next year, no matter how hard, staff works to build a balance sheet and go do deals, you know, benefit Alaskans. Financial standpoint, we're kind of the tail here on the dog.
Well, one of the things is, unless the big factor in this is probably the stock market too, because most of the investments are in the stock market. So, majority of the time, the liability would go down unless there's big crashes there, because as people get older, retire, and then most people move from tier 1, 2 to 3, and then they're in defined contribution, then they would not be in the liability anymore. So that's why when he says like next 20 to 30 years, it's all going to get extinguished. So you'd expect the liability to go down every year unless things change, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't think I'm any more... of it, but it is.
And then we have corrected and uncorrected misstatements over here. No corrected items, but we do have an uncorrected item in the financial statements, and that's we've discussed that every year with the board. It's just the way ADA treats the current portion of the loan receivable. The amount that's booked is based on what is expected, what ADA expects to get in the next year. GAAP really requires, based on contractual rate, how much you'd book, so that there's a difference in that. But really, what's in the financial really truly reflects what you will get next year. Okay. Other than that, like we said earlier, no other major issues.
Brenda, just real quickly, mm-hmm. for the board, would you describe the difference between unrestricted and restricted cash?
Yes. Restricted cash would be a cash balance that's whose use is restricted by a third-party document or something like that, legislation. Unrestricted cash is cash that we can spend as we see fit within the organization.
Yeah, so internal controls, no issues there. No disagreements with management or any significant difficulties encountered during the audit. So that's all I have on the wrap up.
Were we going to pay? Did we pay those bonds off?
Yes, and so that was one of the things I was going to highlight, but we didn't do that until October. So
right.
At June 30, they're still on the balance sheet, but there is $39.7 million in GO bonds that you'll see on the June 30 balance sheet that will not be there for June 30, 2020, because we defeased those in April or in October,
okay.
And those will go away. Just highlights, total assets and deferred outflows was $1.5 billion, net position of $1.3 billion. We funded $51.4 million in loan participations during the year. Probably the largest transaction we had this year as far as complexity was the structure of our Mustang project, which is included in these financial statements. And I would recommend, it's a good read if you want a good overview of what happened during the year, to read management's discussion and analysis, because I think it does a pretty good job of walking through the changes in our balance sheet and income statement.
Didn't we change something in Juneau on the legislation for mark-to-market?
Yes, so that was part of our dividend calculation, and we requested a legislative change, a statutory change, so that unrealized gains and losses in our investment portfolio would not be included in our dividend base. So what that means for this year is there was a $30 million swing between FY18 and FY19 due to realized and unrealized gains and losses on our investments. The net increase of $18 million in FY19 compared to a net decrease of $12 million in FY18 and net unrealized gains of $19.1 million in FY19 compared to $9.7 million in unrealized losses in FY18. So they're big numbers, and if you look at ADA, most years that is the biggest knob
right.
on our income statement is the market fluctuations.
Okay.
And I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Yulia and her staff for doing a really great job all throughout the year, and especially at year-end on the audit. There's a lot of work that goes into the 91 pages in our financial statements. So I really appreciate that. And I think, since I've been here, ADA's financial statements have grown from about 20 pages to 91 pages. And a lot of that is those pesky GASBs that keep coming up every year, making us add more and more disclosures in our financials.
It's like attorneys passing statutes.
Right. It's the Accountant's Full Employment Act.
So accountants are passing stuff to make more business for accountants.
Exactly.
That's on the record, by the way.
Another thing I'd like to say about our financial statements is there is a schedule on the back of the financial statements. It's schedule, I want to say, 6, that is a lot of information about our development projects. And a lot of the disclosures in here are not required, but we like to put everything in one document so that when we get questions throughout the year from the public, we can point them to a document that has been well-written and has all the information that's relevant. So if you get questions as board members on our projects, that's a good place to point people for information.
So, Brenda, would you go quickly over
the operating side of the P&L statement as
sure.
far as how we did
sure.
that side of it?
Yeah.
And a page?
So page 23 is where the operating statement is located. And high level, we had 80.4 million in net operating revenues compared to 64.3 million in FY18. Operating expenses, we had 32.9 million in operating expenses compared to 39.2. So a slight decrease in our total operating expenses, giving us operating income for FY19 of 47.6 million. Compared to
net of our investment.
Yes, that would have included those unrealized and realized gains and losses.
That.
Yes. Yeah. So that's
so,
that item is on if you look under operating revenues,
yeah.
About midpoint down there's a line item that says net increase, decrease in fair value of investments. So
from the standpoint it's 47 million minus the 17.
The 17 is realized and unrealized. So actually that 17 includes about 19 million of unrealized gains. So you'd really, if you wanted to just take the unrealized portion out, that would be the piece that would come out.
Okay.
And that actually is highlighted for dividend calculations. As we talked, that becomes a deduct. The schedule, let me find it for you. See, if you go to Schedule 5 on page 83.
What page?
83, Schedule 5. At the bottom of that page is a computation that takes you from the net income, net position for financial statement purposes to our statutory net income for the dividend. And you'll see there's a mark-to-market fair value adjustment, a deduct of $19.1 million.
Okay.
Those are those unrealized gains.
Okay.
Are those primarily on like our bond portfolio, or are they in our loan and
only our fixed income investment portfolio?
Okay, so it's literally the market type
yeah.
things.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So back on page 20, did that answer your question, Dana? Okay. So back on page 23, then. We have some non-operating revenues and expenses, totaling net expenses of about $1.3 million for FY19. So we had a total increase in net position or equity of $46.3 million in FY19 compared to $13.4 million in FY18. And that also is inclusive of our dividend. The dividend to the state of Alaska, we paid $4.8 million in FY19 compared to $12.9 million in FY18. Is that good enough? Okay. Any questions or?
So I got a question for Tom. So Tom, we have $1.3 billion in assets. What was our net income without the up and down in the investment portfolio?
Well, that's back on 23, Mr. Chairman, and Brenda's more fluent than
like,
I am.
It looks
but
like it's 27.
Yeah, so if you take out the 19.
What percentage is that?
46 minus 19. Let me see. I can do quick math. So 41%, if I did 19 divided by 46. Is that what you're looking for? The $19 million would have been the unrealized gains from our investment portfolio.
26%
compared to the $46 million total net income.
Okay.
So that's 41% is what I get.
Okay, so what's the so 26 out of $1.3 billion is what percent rate of
return? Oh, okay.
So
you wanted 46?
No, 26.
26.
6 divided by 137. What did we say it was?
1328. 1 point, yeah, about 2%.
What is it?
About 2%.
Okay. So our return on assets is about 2%.
Yes.
I mean,
but
Just FYI, if we were a bank, it would be more like 1%, and we'd be doing pretty well then.
Yeah. So the $46 million, though, for net income, would also a deduct out of that is our dividend to the state of $4.8 million.
I'm just wondering if that covers inflation.
Oh, maybe 3% inflation or so?
What was our total liability position, Brenda?
So what's our net? I guess I'm trying to figure out our net equity.
So net equity, what's that? Yeah. So on page 22,
yeah.
Total net position is $1.387 billion.
Yeah.
On total net position, the return doesn't look as good, but on assets, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Dana. But we are a development agency, right?
We are. Okay. Yeah. Any other questions or?
Julie, any questions?
No.
Are you able to eat candy?
I am. I just got busted. I'm pounding it down.
Get her some sugar.
Are we that low on sugar?
We shamed her here. Now
that is no reflection on your presentation whatsoever.
Whoa! That was a body slam.
So Brenda, I mean, historically, I mean, was this a fairly typical year? Was it a better year? Was it a not so good year? How would you characterize it?
I'd say it's probably fairly typical. You know, like I said, the unrealized gains and losses in our investment portfolio is the biggest thing that changes our income from year to year. If you were to take that out and look at Ada's income from year to year without that, it's generally pretty stable.
When does the cash flow stop on the Red Dog projects?
The final payments are 2041. Okay. Yeah.
Then what are we going
to
do?
Well, we're going to go over that tomorrow. I've asked in our work session just for the board to just so we can see what the cash flows are.
We do have a cash flow. Yeah.
You know, so the goal is to obviously try to do 3% rate of return or 4% rate of return to build that balance sheet up to be able to compensate for these things that are ultimately gets paid off.
Yeah.
So. Buy Farm Bureau bonds and make 3.2%. Back in Washington, D.C., just buy them all day long at 3.2 and take them out anytime you want.
Yeah.
Brenda, which line would give us the interest earned on the commercial loan participations?
Let's see. It's interest on loans. So let me get back to page 23. So it's actually the first line, interest on loans. So we had $17.7 million. And I'm picking up the non-major funds, so there's $395,000 that relates to the SBED and RDIF loan funds, too. So loan participations are really the 17.3 in the revolving fund.
So what is that, a percentage of the return on our loans?
I think the weighted average rate on our loans is, Yulia can tell me, about 4%, a little 4. Over 4, 4.1.
All right. Are you done?
Yes.
Any questions on the P&L statements or the financial reports? Thank you very much. Great job.
Very much.
Chair, do we need to make a formal motion to accept these?
No.
I do not. I lost it.
I don't know if that's, is that,
do we need to,
Brenda, we had talked about,
maybe we shouldn't do that as a matter of course.
Do we have a resolution to approve the
resolution to approve the financial?
We didn't do a resolution last time. I think that was going to be just a motion.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Brenda and I had talked about in the past, correct, Brenda?
Uh-huh.
They had just made a motion to accept the audited financials. So I make a motion to accept the audited financials from BDO.
Second.
Discussion? Well, I'd like to say that I appreciate Brenda and her staff, all of them who are here today and those that aren't, for good work. I've noticed, though, over my tenure here, it's been consistent. No changes, no weird things, other than...
Maybe some weird things, but...
other than what, you know, GAAP makes you do, but appreciate it. So, any objection? Hearing none?
Motion passes.
Just item number B, resolution G19-22, approving ADA revenue bond series 2019A, 2019B for the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation project. That's a big book here, Tom.
Yeah. Big book.
And I've not read it, but our CFO has.
Oh,
But
you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, there is a presentation. I sure recommend approval of this resolution. There's $100 million of revenue refunding bonds. We're just refunding with existing bonds with new bonds. And they want to close yet this year, which is remarkably aggressive, but I'm sure they're going to do it. And Brenda Applegate, the CFO, will introduce the people who are online, and they'll go through quickly their presentation.
All right.
So, resolution number G1922 requests the board's approval for ADA to issue conduit refunding revenue bonds in an amount not to exceed $100 million for the Greater Fairbanks Hospital Foundation project, and authorizes the following documents in substantially the form included in your board packets: an indenture buy-in between ADA and U.S. Bank as trustee, a loan agreement between ADA and the borrower, a contract of purchase for the bonds, preliminary official statement, and it delegates authority to ADA's executive director and myself to complete the transaction. The transaction is anticipated to close on December 31st, 2019, and we've prepared a brief PowerPoint to summarize the transaction that I'm going to go through in just a few minutes. And hopefully we have the following people online. I think as folks were waiting for us to get going, I was losing people. So for the folks online, we should have Mike Newman with Hilltop Securities. He's the financial advisor for the foundation. Shelley Ebenall is executive director and general counsel for the foundation. Gary Roderick is Chief Financial Officer for Foundation Health Partners. Dave Grossklaus is partner for Dorsey Whitney and their bond counsel. And Ken Vassar with the law offices of Ken Vassar is also bond counsel. Do we have all those folks on the line?
Yes. I'm here, Brenda.
Ken?
Yep.
She can't hear
Mike Newman's on.
Okay. We've got a group at least. So I'll run through the presentation quickly, and there's also a copy in your board packets.
You didn't give me a float up, so I don't have it on there.
Oh, it's okay.
You never gave it to me.
Oh, Carrie had it, but okay.
So
okay.
For...
We'll just go through it in the board packets then.
So it's not going to be online? It's not going to be up on there?
Apparently not. So,
That's a demerit.
So if you could follow along in your board packets, who is the borrower? The borrower is the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation. They're an Alaskan 501c3 nonprofit corporation. They own, among other properties. Giving feedback.
I don't know what the...
They own, among other properties, the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, Denali Center, which is a skilled nursing facility, Tanana Valley Clinic, and they lease properties to the Foundation Health Partners. And the Foundation is the sole member of Foundation Health Partners. The financing, as Tom had touched on page 3, it's a conduit issue, which it's important to note that this is not an obligation of ADA or the state, and the bonds are payable solely from the payments made by the borrower under the bond document. The issuance does not require private activity bond allocation from the state of Alaska. The bond proceeds loaned to the borrower will be in an amount that's not to exceed $100 million, and these will be fixed-rate bonds. And they're actually refunding some variable rate bonds at the foundation.
Just out of curiosity, what are they going to do with the money?
They are going to, it's basically a refinancing. So they're going to be taking the funds and refinancing existing ADA conduit revenue bonds that are variable rate bonds.
Okay.
Okay, on to page four, and actually, to answer your question on page four, what is the project? It's to refund the outstanding principal amount of the authority's variable rate refunding revenue bonds, Series 2009A, plus accrued interest, and they're currently outstanding at $61,550,000. They will also be refunding the outstanding Series 2009B bonds plus accrued interest in a principal amount of $16,635,000. There is a swap termination payment that may be made out of these bond proceeds that's associated with those bonds, and they will be funding some reserve accounts. Any questions? Okay.
Linda, do we know how much the swap termination payment is?
I do not know that. For the folks on the line, can anyone answer that question?
Brenda, can you hear us?
Yes.
Brenda, it was $9.3 million, and we're not paying it out of bond proceeds. We terminated it today.
Okay, so they've opted to not make that part of our project.
What's the fixed interest rate on this bond, on this $100 million?
They haven't been priced yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
I bet we could come up with Mike Newman could come up with an estimate. Probably.
Mike, do you have an estimate of the rate that we're expecting on these bonds?
The true interest cost is, as of December 3rd, would have been approximately 2.51%.
Wow.
You're tax exempt or taxable bonds?
Tax exempt.
Tax exempt. Great rate.
Excellent rate.
Yeah.
Free money. I would guess their current bonds have a higher rate, even though they're variable rate. Are they higher than this month?
Mike, that would probably be for you.
I can you repeat the question? I only heard part of it.
I was just asking, are the current bonds, I know they're variable rate, but right now is the rate higher than the 2.5% or lower or right about there?
The interest rate on the bond. Okay, Shelley.
So we get a daily rate, and the daily rate was 1.18 today, so no on the variable rate. But we also have an LOC fee and a remarketing fee that does bring it above the 2.whatever%.
Okay, thanks. So you're kind of doing this to protect against sort of expected future rate increases. Basically, you're financing it close to the same rate, but you protect yourself against rates going up. Is that the basic logic of this?
Yes. It's a reduction in risk. It eliminates variable rate risk on the bonds. It eliminates risk against a swap counterparty. It just makes it very simple debt. It removes the bank renewal risk who provides the letter of credit. It simply simplifies the debt structure. And because of the letter of credit, the foundation will likely see a savings when all is said and done.
Thank you.
So on to page five, the key documents that you will be approving with this resolution in the form is the loan and security agreement, the indenture, the contract of purchase, the form of the bonds, and the form of the preliminary official statement. Any other questions? I think that's all I had.
So, Brenda, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what would this $100 million bring the total bonding that we've done on
So
on this type of bond.
So Ada's issued over $1.66 billion in conduit bonds before this issuance, and this is a refunding, and so that dollar amount does not include refundings because it's just refinancing something that's already there. For over 320 projects, at June 30, 2019, there was $533.8 million outstanding in Ada conduit bonds that have been issued since July 1st, 1995, and about 68% is in the healthcare industry, which is where these bonds would be.
So with these conduit revenue bonds, that big list of reports that we looked at this morning, is there any of that associated with on that list?
Because Ada is the issuer on conduit bonds, but we're not the obligor. It's the obligor's responsibility for compliance, and so we make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do, but as far as reporting on EMMA, tracking the project, making sure the proceeds are used as they should be, that's all on the borrower.
So it's not a big
It's not a big administrative lift for us, no.
Okay.
You know, obviously, as we move on, sometimes little tweaks need to be made. They want to change something in the structure that we get involved in after they're issued. But for the most part, we're responsible for just making sure things are getting done.
Do we get paid for the labor you do put in for doing those checks and balances?
We get a fee. We get an issuance fee, yep.
Does it cover those costs?
I would say yes. We've never tracked. The fee is actually calculated based on how big the dollar the issuance is. So it should cover our costs because, like I said, there's a lot of cost up front. Like, I spend a lot of time at the beginning when we're issuing the bonds, but afterwards there's very little that we generally
get involved.
How
much is the fee? Is it a one-time fee?
It's a one-time fee.
How much is that?
You know, I knew you were going to ask, and I meant to bring it with me for the $100 million, and I forgot it. But it's a sliding fee based on the dollar amount of the issuance, and I don't know. Yulia, do you remember?
I don't remember the percentage, but there are three thresholds, $50 million, $40 million, and then the remaining amount. And there is a different percentage for each threshold.
So this threshold's $100 million, right? I mean, that's what this issuance is going to be?
Right.
Yeah.
Up to 100.
And I can get, I have it in my emails. I just didn't grab the number before I came to the meeting.
Just curious.
Yeah. I can get that for you. No problem.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions? Are we going to make Tom read this big book?
No.
For minutes. We'd have to listen to that, so we don't need to have it. All right. The chair will entertain my motion.
I move resolution number G19-22.
Second. Discussion. Well, I'll say for the record, you could put something on the record that I think it's great that the Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation is proactive in their debt management and risk management. And it's good to see that. I think the community up there will benefit years to come for that.
I'd like to say, for the size of our town, Fairbanks has the best hospital in the world. It's one of the most modern, it probably is the most modern hospital in the world, with their new operating suite just finished. And we're a small town, and to have that kind of a facility and to have that kind of healthcare is pretty amazing. So, and this is even shows just better stewardship right here.
Further discussion?
Thanks.
Quinn, would you poll the board?
Ms. Sandy.
Yes.
Mr. Stanarski.
Yes.
Mr. Kidding.
Yes.
Mr. Polo.
Yes.
Ms. Sharon Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Pruse.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. That brings us to item number C, loan resolution L19-12 Island Holding LLC.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I approve this, and if I could have Kristen, who runs our loan portfolio program. It seems like it's been ages since the loan committee approved this, but best of my recollection, and this was brought to us by FNBA and participation, of course, and I think the people are taking equity out for new construction and in Kodiak, new hotel capacity, and I'll let Chris take over and clarify anything that my recollection may have got wrong.
Good afternoon. Hi.
Yes, this is a loan participation request, as Tom indicated, from FNBA for Island Holdings, LLC, your loan resolution 19-12. Our participating interest is $6,497,190, 25-year term at a fixed rate, 3.82. Guarantors on this debt are Susan Johnson and Daniel Gilbert. It is an equity extraction from the Best Western and Kodiak to build a new hotel that is fairly proximate, called the Kodiak Compass Suites, which is a new 38-room hotel. There will be 10 new jobs created with this construction. The management of the hotel is being managed by Susan Johnson, who has over 12 years of experience with Best Western. She and her husband, Dan Gilbert, currently own and manage several commercial retail buildings, a duplex, two single family homes, and together they manage this newly completed Kodiak Compass Suites. We would take a first deed of trust on the property. It was appraised by North Pacific Advisors at $10,030,000, on the real estate and $230,000 on FF&E, furniture, fixtures, and equipment, which would give you a 72% loan-to-value on the real estate only. And the debt service coverage on this property, per the appraisal, is 1.98 to 1. There are no known environmental issues on this property. In regards to the market, a major sector of the local economy, which drives short-term demand for hotels and long-term demand for housing, is the Kodiak U.S. Coast Guard facility. They have undergone recent expansion. They'll remain as a growing factor in the Kodiak economy. And the market has rebounded in the past several years and is forecast to remain steady as long as the Alaskan and national economies remain strong. The strengths that we saw in this credit were the fact that it is professionally managed with good historical operating history. It has a 72% loan-to-value. It is a flagged hotel, being a Best Western, and it is in a good downtown location for Kodiak. We didn't see any weaknesses other than, you know, no extraordinary risk beyond your typical market risk, which is always there. And in regards to portfolio diversification, these would be numbers as of September 30th. Total dollars in the Gulf region as a percentage of ADA's total portfolio dollars statewide increased from 4.35% to 5.8%. ADA has 12% of its total statewide portfolio in the tourism industry. This would increase to 13.34%. And for participated loans within the Gulf region, 55.1% is attributable to tourism, which consists of three hotels currently financed. And this loan will increase that penetration of the tourism industry to 66.9%.
So, Chris?
Yes.
Quick questions while you're on that part of it.
Yes.
So, you mentioned environmental, no known environmental. Was it an environmental assessment done?
Yeah. I believe a phase one was done, was it not? I forgot to mention that. Mark Lonheim, are you on this call with us? He's a loan officer in Kodiak.
I guess I sure am.
Yeah. Did you do a phase one on this?
I thought we did. I'm double checking. If we have it on file, I can certainly forward it to you.
I think that we have a phase one, but I can confirm that.
Well, from a risk standpoint, you've got a facility that's been there for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually stayed in it, and
right.
I would think that would be the first and foremost that would be done.
Environmental
on any existing facility.
Environmental assessments aren't always done. It depends on the type of facility that it is. This particular hotel, I think, has been there since the beginning of the 90s.
Right. So yeah. It's not new construction.
Right.
So it's you know, it's not virgin ground.
You'd be sure it's got buried fuel tanks.
Mm.
I'm sure of that. And all fuel tanks leak eventually.
Okay. We'll follow up. We'll follow up on that.
Yeah, my recommendation is that's done prior to closing, if you haven't done it.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay. The other thing is that you say we got 13% in tourism. Is that correct?
In the Gulf region.
In the Gulf. 13% in the Gulf region.
Yeah.
What do we have overall?
Dollar-wise?
Percentage of our portfolio.
It's not very high right now because we've extracted out...
It's in the dashboard. I don't remember.
Well, I've got the numbers here, too, that I did separately. I don't know what the dashboard says, but I did look at all the hotels that we have in our portfolio. And this does not include the Marriott. I mean, the Marriott we have a commitment on, but it's not a closed loan. So these are just funded loans. We have, I'm going to round it, $23.5 million. Which is only about a little over 5% of our portfolio in hotels. Now, there's hotels and there's tourism. Well, these are hotels that I'm talking about.
Where I'm driving with this is, do you have a policy in place of what percentage of the portfolio should be allocated to indie industry?
No.
Do you think that's a smart idea?
I thought about this, and no, I don't. We're trying to help, as I read the enabling statutes for ADA, which I kind of have a little bit memorized now, we don't have a cap on the number of deals we do. Our revolving fund is healthy, and if deals come through the door and qualify and create jobs and an economy, then no. And if we'd have had a cap, for instance, we would not have anticipated this incredible double-digit year-over-year growth of the cruise ship industry. And so we might be bumping up against a cap we would have had for that industry because we couldn't...
I didn't ask about a cap. So, I asked if you had a policy, the percentage... of the investment in one particular industry.
No.
It's for risk management. It's not having all your eggs in one basket. My suggestion is you review that, you look at that, just so you have something. At least it gives you a tickle file that says, hey, we're 20% now of our portfolio in this market. Maybe we should do a little more due diligence before we do something so that all the eggs are in one basket. That's my comment here. I'm not saying that you don't turn away the deals. I'm just saying from good business practices. So when you brought up the 13%, and then you percentage of hotels, I'm thinking, well, it's hotels are all the hotels and tourism. The tourism market turns around and doesn't do very good. Which things go up, sometimes they go down, then they come back up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're doing your risk management assessments, and it may even play into different rates. The more percentage of your portfolio gets into something, but that's something down the line. I just bring this up because you're always bringing up your percentage of this is and what the portfolio is, and so it's
and
great
we
to
do
know
pay
that.
Attention to it. We just don't have a policy.
It's great to know that, but there's nothing to compare it to, other than it's just a number you're telling us.
So if you added the hotel to the tourism, what would that percentage be?
Well, the hotels are part of tourism.
You said that the 13 was just hotels, you said?
No. The 13 was tourism, and the hotels are about 5.5%, close to 6%.
That doesn't include the new hotel.
That does not include the new hotel, and that will be a fairly large dollar amount, so that percentage will
jump. That's a commitment already, right?
It is a commitment.
So to my mind, it's money gone. So it needs to be included in your analysis.
It's a commitment that expires 12/30. So, So they
burn?
Yeah. Yep. So they do want to extend it. They do want to, when they're ready to, come back to us for another commitment because, you know, their insurance always takes longer than they thought. And so they really haven't gotten along with their construction to the degree that they would like.
I look at nothing. To me, commitment is a commitment. Whether the money goes out or not, it's a liability that you're committed to do something. You got to fulfill it. Unless something really changes, and so I think you should include it.
Yeah, well, mentally we do. I mean, you know, the overall hotel percentage, if you include Marriott, is close, is about 10%. And yeah.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but those are my
that's okay.
My questions.
That's okay. I really was at the end of it, so we go ahead.
I have a question then. When you were analyzing their income statements, Did you take into account any big swings and try to figure out what drivers might be there or not?
When we look at the debt service coverage, is what you're talking about, right? They have historically been very profitable, and
until last year.
Yeah, right. And
can you talk to them?
I don't know how much we can say on the record.
Yeah, we're not supposed to go. We're not supposed to go into the financials in public session. You know.
Can you go into executive session?
I would think so. This is.
Typically we do.
I motion that we go into executive session to discuss the loan request by First National Bank and Island Holdings.
Second. Objections? Okay, we're in. We'll stay here.
Okay, let me put the recording on. Okay. While the board is in executive session, this phone lines will be muted. You're back on the record.
I'll say that the board didn't take any actions in relationship to the discussions while in executive session. That brings us back into regular session. I'll entertain a motion on L-19-12.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we postpone a decision on loan resolution number L-19-12 till the January meeting.
Second.
Any objections? Hearing none, it's postponed until next month. That brings us to item number D. Oh, executive session again. This is for discussion of confidential financial information related to FY21-8 dividend. It's a good thing to the state. Sets loan, Navison upgrade. Ooh, I don't know about that one. Mustang project development. You kind of loaded us up here. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Copper River.
Oh, mine doesn't say that.
It's in the one I gave you.
All right, and Copper River Seafood. Oh, well. But too many of them. So, with that, I'll take the motion to do that.
So moved.
Second.
Any objection? Okay, so we are in executive session, so we're going to go into the
readout room.
What do we need to bring with us?
Page 83 of the CAFR.
Page what?
Interesting. You're on the record.
I don't even know where my damn sheet is. I'm on the record. No, I got to say something about getting out of. Where's my cheat sheet?
Right here.
All right, we're back on the record. Let's see. I'll advise the board to not take any formal actions on the matters discussed while in executive session. And I'll apologize in advance for the length on that. I appreciate everybody hanging out with us tonight. So with that, that brings us up to item number E, resolution 19-25, approving a loan from SETS to fund IGU. Tom?
This is simply an additional $4 million loan out of SETS to the Interior Gas Utility. It's identical to the $10 million loan also out of SETS that the board did earlier this year. And under the very same terms, and it's under the SETS terms with the period of time with no interest and then a 0.25% interest thereafter. It's very simple. It's just that $4 million on top of the $10 million we did earlier to the IGU out of SETS, and SETS, of course, was established for the IGU.
Okay. All right. So
I move resolution number G-19-25.
Second.
Discussion. Quinn, would you pull the board?
Ms. Sandy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarski.
Yes.
Mr. Kidding.
Yes.
Mr. Fogle.
Yes.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carried.
It brings us to F, resolution G-19-23, declaring a dividend to the state for FY21. Tom?
Yep. This is the same resolution that the board has used each year, except the dates are changed and the dollar amount. And We have a very short PowerPoint that the Chief Financial Officer would like to show to you, and it's just a couple of pages on the dividend.
And
then she has the amount written down, and I don't know where I wrote it, so...
For the record, this is Brenda Applegate.
Welcome back, Brenda.
Thank you. Resolution G19-23 provides for the board determination of the FY21 dividend to the state of Alaska. It recommends a 50% dividend from the revolving fund in the amount of $13,950,000 and a 50% dividend from the CESS fund totaling $525,000. And the PowerPoint above here shows, let's see, FY21 dividend to the state of Alaska. By statute, AS 4488088 discusses how the dividend is to be calculated. The board determines our dividend annually. Dividends are required to be no less than 25% and no greater than 50% of our statutory net income as set out in NADA's audited financial statements. And there's a two-year lag for the dividend, so the dividend that we're discussing now is based on our FY19 results. Dividends may not exceed our unrestricted net income in each fund, and ADA has paid or declared $407.9 million in dividends to date before this dividend we're talking about today. ADA's funds subject to the dividend statute include the revolving fund, the CETS fund, and the Arctic Infrastructure Development Fund, which is currently not capitalized. The FY19 statutory net income for the FY21 dividend calculation can be found in ADA's FY19 audited financial statement, Schedule 5. Revolving fund statutory net income for the dividend is $27,902,000. The CETS statutory net income is $1,050,000. And as I said, the Arctic Infrastructure Fund has no funds in it right now, so it's not subject to the dividend. The range that we are talking about at 25% for the revolving fund would be $6,976,000. The 50% is $13,950,000. CETS fund 25% is $263,000. 50% is $525,000. And we're recommending the 50% dividend amounts. And that's all I have. Listeners, questions?
All right, so let's get the resolution on the table.
I move resolution number G19-23.
Thank you. All right, so Brenda, would you tell me again how much is off the revolving fund?
The revolving fund.
For the record, so we put it in this resolution.
Hold on, let me get back to it.
Do you want me to put
No, we're
back?
Good. Okay. $13,950 is the revolving.
$13,950?
Yes.
And then
$125,000 on the CETS fund.
Yes.
$125,000.
I did want it.
All right. So the resolution before us didn't have those numbers in that. So are we okay with someone friendly amendment to put those numbers in?
Yes.
Is there any objection to that? All right. No objection. So now the resolution says that the sum of $13,950,000 out of the revolving fund and $525,000 out of the
CETS fund.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Discussion. You need to put something on the record.
I think it's been vetted well. We're following statute, and the executive director had some very good comments of why we should pay the maximum amount, and I think it was unanimously supporting him because we trust his judgment, and it seems to me that the state should be very happy to get the maximum amount statute.
Thank you, Bernie.
I think also if you look back the past 17 out of 24 times we paid the 50% level, also with this, the restricted amount of funds to the state, giving them the maximum amount to give them more funds available, I think is the right thing to do. And so since we're able to do this, I think it's we should go with your recommendation, Tom.
Thank you. Further discussion? Julie? Mr. Revenue?
Nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, you know, these are just round numbers because I didn't have a chance to do that. So I'll bring it to everybody's attention that since the dividends were started to be paid in 1995, when you add the $14 million, roughly, we were at 407. So we're adding another $15 million. So what is that, 527 or 528, something like that? 428, something like that, to date for ADA. If I remember right, this is again, more dollars than the state has put in to ADA. So very proud of that. I'd like to say I'm very proud of the staff's hard work, more with less. I will say that I think the goal of everybody here is to build the balance sheet to be able to do more for more opportunities in the state of Alaska. And part of that is by your hard work and building that with us. So I want to thank you for that. So with that, Kryn, would you pull the board?
Okay. Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Mr. Samarowski?
Yes.
Mr. Ketty?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Pruse?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Brings us to Resolution G19-24. Annual FY21 operating budget submission to OMB. Tom?
This establishes that the board gets the first look, the prerogative on the board on the operating budget before we ship it off into the process, into that black box. It's what we all want. We want autonomy. We want the board to have autonomy. We want the agency to be an independent agency. Is very stark reality when we got downgraded two notches just because somebody took $2 million out of us and somebody else took a very strong look at taking $254 million out of us. Worst case scenario, the future value of what we could lose because of that $2 million coming out and going to the Northwest Arctic Borough and that $254 million looked at, it could cost... our money belongs to the public. It could cost the public $25 million in future value for that $2 million and the look at taking $254 million. I mean, it's serious money that it's cost the people of the state of Alaska in that two-notch credit rating downgrade. So clearly, we need the board to be more engaged, and this establishes that not only is the board going to be engaged, but they get the first look at it, the first prerogative. So I sure recommend this resolution.
Thank you, Tom, and I appreciate you forwarding this resolution to the board for consideration. Would someone like to put it on the table?
I move resolution number G19-24.
Second. Discussion?
I believe it's... It makes good sense. It hasn't been done in the past. This kind of now memorializes it so it gets done, and I think that I think we have a duty, the board has a duty, to look at this budget. So thank you, Tom, for making it happen.
Kryn, would you pull the board?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski?
Yes.
Mr. Ketting?
Yes.
Mr. Fogle?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Pruse?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Brings us up to item number H, Resolution G17-19A, approving a Navis system upgrade with server upgrade. Tom?
This is the same Navision resolution that you've seen at previous board meetings, except with a new amount of $240,000, and we did have a thorough discussion on this resolution. I recommend it, and I think all questions have been answered.
Okay. Tom, before we get to putting on the thing, for the record, it's $340 million, of which $340,000, of which $100,000 has already been approved.
Yep.
So this is an additional $240,000 ask. Would you tell us how long this will take?
It's my best recollection. We were talking a maximum of about 8 months. The majority of that time is the time that one of the vendors will have our data set and be upgrading it.
Okay. So would it be too much to ask that the board gets an update every 60 days?
Not at all. No, I think you heard a commitment of every month. And that's, you know,
Well, we've got a month in there that we're not meeting.
I think sending one.
Yeah, every board meeting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I envisioned we'd send you an email update, and we can do that too. But whatever you like.
Okay.
Every board meeting, please.
Okay.
And how you're confident in the security while we transition to a new system?
Yeah, there's no such thing as risk-free, but yes, I have confidence in the people and in the process.
Okay. And do you believe the 340 is enough?
Yes, I do. It will be enough.
All right. So I'll look for a motion to put on the floor.
I move resolution number G17-19A.
Discussion. We've had a little discussion.
Mr. Chairman,
discussion call for the question.
I'm not sure the resolution reads correctly.
Section 2, I'm not sure which version you're looking at, says this amount includes the $100,000 previously approved. Should say does not include the $100,000 previously approved, because the total you want is $340, not $240, right?
Did we approve the $100 already?
Either the $240 in Section 2 needs to be changed to $340.
Yeah.
Or that sentence needs to say does not include.
That's what when I just reading it, and of course we've had a long day, it was, thank you, because that was confusing me as I looked at
Jerry, the suggestion is to change what word?
Well, the easiest thing to do would be to change 240 to 340 in section 2.
All right.
And also in the last whereas prior to that.
Okay. I've got the final resolution.
No, on the next.
That's not what I have. But yeah, I don't know what they have.
That's not what I have.
I don't have it either.
He has.
Okay, no. I was given this as a.
That's okay. We'll just do a friendly amendment. So we're going to change
the 240 to 340. The 340 in the final whereas and 340 in section 2.
Okay. So we'll just use that.
Yep. Okay, so I'll need a motion for that.
Motion to amend resolution G17-9A. 19A, sorry. In Section 2, it should read the expenditure of up to $340,000 instead of $240,000. And in the previous whereas paragraph, it should also say $340,000 on the last sentence.
Second.
Any objections to a friendly amendment? Hearing none. Quinn, would you pull the board?
Okay. Ms. Sandy. Yeah. Deputy Commissioner
Sadarovsky.
Yes. Mr.
Kedding.
Yes. Mr. Fogel.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Tom, that brings us to director reports, A through E.
Well, we actually have the dashboard on the agenda for tomorrow, so we could defer that. Also, the projects that we didn't treat today, we have on the agenda for tomorrow, particularly Ambler. So we the IEP quarterly report, that's just something that is included here. I don't know that you need us to go through it. And obviously Delta and ECHO, continuing education, and next meeting. And really, I think I've exhausted my comments for today. So I don't think you need comments from me. So honestly, I think 8 is taken care of.
Thank you, Tom. All right. Item number 9, board comments. Bill?
I'll tell you, if I wasn't driving back out to the valley tonight, I'd be having several glasses of wine.
I think you speak for all of us. Including staff.
I
just like to say thank you, not only to Tom, but also his staff. You know, you guys do an incredible job here, and I know that you're working a lot of hours, and it doesn't go unnoticed, not only by myself, but also the board, and I want to say thank you for that. We're doing a great mission here, and we want to continue to do that, so thank you.
I'd like to say thank you as well, and all the work that was put in to preparing the documentation for our discussions this morning was a lot of work, and I recognize that, and I think we have a good path forward, so I'm looking forward to working with you more in that area, so thank you. More to come.
No simple solutions, only intelligent choices, and I think there was a lot of good choices made today and a lot of discussion that requires some Beef Eater's gin and tonic with a splash of roses, lime juice, and three large olives. But we can make that work. A couple, two or three of them puppies tonight, and this will be a beautiful day. So we do recognize the work that is put in by the staff, and we recognize the leadership. So thank you for what you do.
I'll just simply second what all my fellow board members have said and will say.
How about the gin and tonic with the splash? Oh, okay.
Well, I do echo those efforts. I will say that I noticed that we didn't have a recorder today. So does that mean our...
They're getting a copy of the recordings I've been making.
Okay. Good. So we think that'll work?
We hope.
Yeah?
Well, at least for this meeting.
I wish you luck. I'd also like to thank Tom for his due diligence and focus on the challenges we deal with every day. I appreciate that. And for Brenda on the financial stuff. There's a lot today. There really was. And finally, I'd like to recognize your new employee. He used to work for me, good guy, Jesse Peterson back there, and a new senior project manager. We want to welcome to the organization, Jesse. We look forward to good, positive things, and Alan will keep you focused and do good things for him, because you got to make him look good.
So. Will do.
Jesse, how's it feel to have a real job?
It wears suit and tie.
So with that, I will take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
No, I'm saying we are adjourned.